It's life on life's terms. Here we are, Life on Life Terms podcast. I'm Tom Robinson. I would say that we're not affiliated with any 12-step program.
Chris Mandeville.
Steve Marino. Checking in.
All right, and we're at a New Way Recovery Center in Quincy, Mass. So we have Steve on tonight. He's going to tell his story, and we're going to make fun of him.
Yep.
Say a bunch of stuff that I regret later.
Yeah, there you go. Perfect.
And you can never take it back, because once it's on the internet, it stays.
And the real problem is you're going to remember every part of it.
Right. Yeah, right. Right.
No mind erasers no more.
So so I'll just get into it, I guess. Everybody's story's a little similar, but background, I grew up in an alcoholic household. The father was the alcoholic, and my mother ended up a little bit sicker than us because of that. I witnessed a lot of abuse early on. And most of it mental, not too much physical, but cops at the house a lot, and A lot of sickness.
Yeah,
that's just as damaging, just as hard to deal with.
Yeah.
It occurs to me, but maybe that's not true. But
yeah,
it seems to me it's pretty hard to deal with.
Yeah, she. I often look at her like she's the sick one, out of me and my father. But because of us, you know, it's kind of like the repercussions of our actions. Really end up torturing the people around us so much, and I witnessed that. Grew up, it was normal, you know. It was what my normal at home was not normal. It was very dysfunctional, but I compared the outside, my social life and what went on, what I saw, to my house life, and I looked at my outside, and like what do you mean you don't steal and lie and like manipulate and what do you mean this stuff, like this stuff's normal, you know? It was so normal,
right? That's normal in your house,
right? So like, yeah, so now, you know, as a father now growing up, that's going to be like a huge thing, like what your child sees they're going to imitate for sure.
Yes.
I grew up looking at the world a little differently, and I kind of, if I take myself out of myself and look back on it, it's kind of like yeah, of course I was going to be a drug addict or an alcoholic, you know. There was
I feel the same way.
Yeah. Yeah, my household was like that.
Yeah, if I had to look at a kid that was me, you know what I mean? Right. Now I'm like, "Oh, he's a candidate."
Right.
Him.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. If I was like, yeah, if I knew sure, from the outside, dude. If I looked at me as a child in the household I grew up in, I'd be like, if he doesn't have a really good social life or some really good networking or some people really pulling for him, he's going to get into a lot of trouble. Inevitably was what happened. So I don't remember being like, my social life was really important, and then because my house life was so destructive, but I was using what I learned in my house life to like associate with the people in my social life. So once booze entered the picture, I drank like an alcoholic. It wasn't like I didn't drink to black out all the time. It was more or less like a drink. I wanted to drink more than anybody else, you know? I wanted to be better than anybody. Yeah. I wanted to be able to drink the most, drink the hardest stuff, stay up the latest. That behavior, one thing led to another I bounced around in like 5 different high schools. I wasn't a very good student, you know?
Right.
Again, my social life was more important, so I would show up to school and it was like check into the main class and get your attendance and then take off and smoke weed and drink.
Yeah, because there was something else to do.
I totally relate. That's exactly where I was at. My social life was everything. School life, whatever. Home life sucked because, like, you see, I was always in a power struggle and, you know, mental abuse, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah.
On, you know?
Yeah, I'm not even aware that it was taking place for the most part, you know? Cause it
yeah,
because
we think
normal.
It's normal.
It's so like, normal.
That's right.
It's so dysfunctional. Yeah. But, like, a lot of the times we'll hang out with people that have the same type of home life and, you know, oh, yeah, your dad came home drunk and beat up your mom. Yeah.
Right. It was, yeah. It was
it's normal.
It was kindergarten and show and tell, and I had nothing to show.
Yeah.
So that's what I told about the cops showing up at my house.
Yeah. But, but like, for myself, like, those behaviors started before I ever picked up a drink.
Yeah.
You know, like, I always wanted attention. I didn't care if it was good or if it was bad. I just wanted it.
Yeah.
I wanted to be the focus, you know. Yeah. But then once we get the attention, it's like, what's everyone looking at me for?
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah. Constant, constant state of being uncomfortable.
Yep.
Absolutely.
So I bounced around a bunch of different high schools. I ended up getting a GED. I didn't end up graduating. I ended up, I was like, by senior year in high school, I was fully addicted to Oxycontins. And my principals, they kind of knew it. They were like, you're a great student when you're here. I was lucky that I had a really good principal at that time. I was going to a night school in Boston. And she was like, look, you know, I was already working in the union too. I was making really good money. But I was like, I was just a waste of a human being by the age of like 18, 19, that they were like, just go get a GED and move on with your career. They didn't get too much into the background as far as my drug use at the time. But so I did that. So I went and I got a GED and I dove into being in the union full time. And
at 18.
At 18, yeah. By 16, I was working not for the union, but in that field. And then by 18, I was fully blown. Yeah, by 20, I was like leaving work, grabbing a six pack and a couple oxys, and like going home to my mother's house, and she'd yell at me for not taking the trash out, and I'd be like, oh, I fucking worked all day.
Yeah, right.
You know,
right.
What the fuck? You know, this is bullshit. You know,
yep.
And I don't know. I was completely delusional. But at the age of like 20, 22, to my early 20s, like the pills faded away, and heroin became a big part of the picture.
Oh, yeah, that's normal too.
Everybody because you get a union job, but you're gonna spend your whole paycheck on for me.
Overpriced
for me,
pills.
It was basic finances.
Yeah,
like
finance.
Why would I spend $80 on that when I can get all this for $80?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, exactly.
It was only a matter of time. I remember when it took place, and it was like, I felt like it was only a matter of time anyways. Like, my friends had already been really involved in pills for years before me even. There was a point in this transition of, like, you know, smoking weed and drinking at the park, kind of harmless teenager stuff, and pills came in the picture. And my thinking around that was like, no, man, like, it doesn't come from the earth, man. It's not for me. Like, I still just like this hippie approach to it kind of thing, right? Like, no, man. But they stuck around, man. It was like my social life was so important that I watched my social life deteriorate and my friends go to detoxes and jails before me. But it didn't stop. It wasn't like – there was no, like, all of a sudden, like, this is a bad thing. It was like, no, man, this is how we hang out now. We do these things.
That was your identity. That's – you were taking your identity from your group of friends, and that was what your group of friends do, and that's what we do, us and them. Yeah. That's us, and we do pills.
Right.
We drink to fucking
– yeah, it took a while. It was a couple of years of, like, dude, just do it. And I was like, nah, man, like, I'm going to drink my 40 ounce and whatever.
I got
an eighth, man. You want to put five on it? Like, whatever. It was like, I'm, for the most part, like, that's, to me, that's like kind of normal teenager talk, I guess. But, you know, as dysfunctional as it might be, the pills were around and nobody was really talking about them in a negative light.
Yeah. But at that age for you, that was when they were like breaking on the scene out here.
Right.
You know
what
I mean?
Yeah. That was still,
because
like,
I got into the stuff before the OCs and all that stuff came about. Like, I'd get them.
Yeah.
People would give them to me, and I'd sell them and get dope. Like, I don't want these.
Right.
You know, because I was, like, early 90s.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Right. Oh, to me, they weren't even available. I never even knew where to get them or anything.
Yeah.
I got one time, and I didn't even really get that high. It was 100 milligram.
Yeah, yeah.
100 milligram.
Yeah.
That was, like, very early on.
Yeah.
And, I mean, because all the people I was doing dope with were way older than me. You know? They were, and so they were just hardcore.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, so I bounced around a bunch of different high schools, got the GED, and working full time in the union. Hurt myself on a job, but I started seeing like a physical therapist. They were kind of hip to the prescribing the pills, so I would doctor shop a little bit and bounce around to try to get these scripts. It wasn't good, but by that time I had already dibbled and dabbled in the heroin, so it was like I'm not gonna waste my time even trying to get these scripts to do this when there's other alternatives there. So I never took care of my back. I never took care of the injury. I just compounded it, made it worse, and continued to get high.
Yeah.
And then from like that age up till about 28, it was like, you know, detox, holding halfway house, detox, holding therapeutic community. Like, then it was like no detox, county jail, and then it was and then it was county for a little bit longer, and then it was just get me to county, please. Yeah. Eventually it was please get me off the streets, because this is gonna end really bad. And the charges piled up and the sentences got longer, and
it's pretty crazy that you feel safe because you know you're going to jail.
Yeah, you're getting locked up in cage.
It's like I know if I'm out I'm gonna get high, so just lock me.
Right I remember getting ready to get out and being like, shit. You know, I don't have any kind of resources to make it, and all I met was a group of junkies and criminals like me, and this is going to end bad again. I'm going to come back. So
yeah, you come out of jail with new scams. Yeah, and like all right, now I know how I can make some money.
Give me a call when you get out.
And I met some really good people in there, right? I mean, needless to say, at the time, but not many of them are around now, and if they are, they're either doing the right thing or I don't know anything about them.
Right. Right.
But yeah, so I mean, that's like it was the word progression is definitely true in my experience, that this thing just took a different form every time I picked back up, and it got harder and harder to stop, and the runs got shorter and that kind of thing, and I stepped into like the halls, and I stepped into AA early on. And they were saying this message about, there was a very hopeful message about, spirituality and one day at a time, and a bunch of slogans. And I would come in, and like the good manipulator I was, I would come learn the vocabulary, learn the terminology, stay sober just long enough to get a couple pats on the back. And then and I would go back out. And
you ever go to a meeting just high as fuck? Ugh, there's nothing worse.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I never did.
Yeah.
No?
No.
Oh, yeah.
Because I was in jail. And
you
that's
were in
where
jail.
That's where I really found, the 12-step fellowship.
Yeah.
And I never did that.
Yeah. No, I was kind of black and white. I was like, I understood what was going on there, and if you wanted to do that, cool. And I'll buy into it while I'm not using, but as soon as I would use, like, don't even come near me with that. You know, spiritual stuff. Like, I need $40.
Like, I remember when I went to PT, and there's all these kids from Southie and from Boston, and like they all knew exactly what to say, and I was like, what do they have a fucking class in high school that teaches you guys what to say?
Because yeah,
I'm almost 30 and I don't know any of this shit that you guys are talking about.
Yeah.
And you guys are still wet behind the ears,
right.
And like, you know everything what to say. You can quote the friggin' literature.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's part of it was.
I was just beat up.
Yeah.
I was just beat up.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, for me, I got to a certain point where like, I knew there was a way out, but I just didn't want it anymore. And I was like, maybe, the door's always been open, thank God, but there was a point when I would totally, like, acceptance to me was, I learned it in a jail cell when I realized that this is just the way that my life's gonna go for the rest of my life. Like, I learned a little bit of acceptance then. Like, I started accepting, they're talking about acceptance in the halls, and I learned acceptance, like, I'm going to be a junkie for the rest of my life.
That's interesting. That's an interesting side of it, because I did the same thing.
Yeah.
I said, well, I mean, this is going to be it. I just hope, I can somehow find a way to just keep going, and not. I did accept it at one point.
Yeah.
I was like, this is going to be me. This is
the way I remember the moment that I accepted that.
Yeah.
In
pure defeat. Yeah.
I think it was a veterans home on Main Street in Brockton, and I it was like a revelation. It's like, wow, I'm a junkie.
This is going to be it.
I'm an addict.
This is going to be it. I better start remembering these CEOs' names and stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm an addict, and, like, I don't know what to do now.
Yeah.
But I remember it. Like, I can picture it in my head.
Yeah, I completely bought into to the lifestyle pretty bad. And if anybody was, you know, talking otherwise, if you were sober or not, you know, if you just didn't have $40 or a means for me to get money or drugs, like, I didn't really want anything to do with
you. Yeah, right.
You know,
and you're not going to better my cause, so I don't need you around.
Yeah, like, yeah. Right. I bought into it pretty hard. And if I paid the price, too, you know, it was like, you know, I don't know how I got so many chances. You know, I was lucky, really lucky through the courts that my family was well known with some people in the court. And and some of the judges that I grew up being in front of, you know, dozens of times, they're like family to me. You know, these guys saved my life. Hands down, the court system saved my life by giving me opportunities to get sober again, by presenting the idea that even when I was so beat up and I was like, look, I just need a honey bun, a whisk game, and a half a Suboxone, I'll be fine. When that was like, I'm good, that idea was in my head. Like, there was people there to be like, okay, well, there's also this. Like, you don't have to take that. You know, there was always, and that was, you know, technically, like, that was AA working in somebody else's life. Whether that person was in AA or not, it was somebody just keeping the hope alive for me.
Right.
Because when I had given up all hope,
yeah, you know, like, your bar just got lower and lower and lower. Your standard of living was like, what I know when I went to jail, it was a step up from how I was living.
Absolutely.
Like,
absolutely.
What do you mean? We got heat? We got a blanket? Yeah. I can shower? Really?
Yeah.
Cool.
Right?
You know?
Absolutely.
I can sleep anytime I want?
Yeah.
Well, I think that just the fact of the derision of everybody around you all the time, like, you know, the people looking down on you and thinking, oh, this motherfucker, you know, every time. They look at you. You know, that's weighs
that
on
look
you.
Of disgust.
Oh, yeah.
From your family.
Oh, yeah. You
people that know you.
Stay away from that.
And once you're in treatment or you're in jail, you're away from all that shit. You're like, you don't have to look at those people.
Yeah.
And you don't have to, you know what I mean?
Oh, then it's poor me.
Yeah. Right.
Then I need money for my canteen.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I know I just took everything from you, but I need money in my canteen. You know?
I need more honey buns.
Constant state of delusion. Yeah. Even in sobriety, you know, like a state of delusion. I struggled with it for a really long time. And you know, I'm fortunate. I'm really lucky. You know, I say I'm grateful, and I also say I'm really lucky at the same time. I really believe that, like, you know, I got friends that passed away that I think I was 10 times worse the addict that they were.
Yeah.
And you know, nobody, there's no it's short straws, you know what I mean? Like, you're playing with fire. Especially
Absolutely.
Now, you know.
Especially nowadays.
Yeah.
Dude, I went into to a restroom. I was in the stall. It was at a restaurant. I was going to sit down with the person who sold me this stuff. I come out, and to me, I thought I just came right out. And I was like, where are they? I'm looking at all the tables. I'm looking around. And evidently, they had had a whole meal. They had sat through their whole dinner, had the whole meal, and left. They thought I left right away. They didn't know where I was. I was in there for like an hour.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I had no idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lucky that you
right
came out of it.
How many times? How close to death I was. I used to put in the VCR tape of The Matrix.
Yeah.
That was like a movie I watched again and again. Whatever.
Yeah.
The red pill or the blue pill.
That's right. Yeah. So I get high and then I can't tell you how many times I didn't see the movie at all, and I woke up to the credits.
Right.
It's like that must got to be really close to death, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot.
Oh, yeah, man. Right.
Why Absolutely. Am I still here?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's there's no rhyme or reason to it, man. I don't
it's
know
really
if it's,
weird.
You know. So yeah, like, I always talk about being extremely lucky. You know, there's nothing that I did that anybody else can't do. You know, I didn't do anything magical. The one thing I did do was just I kept coming, right? Like, that's one other thing that people kept talking about. Keep coming. And I did, like, when the opportunity came up and I had an opportunity to keep coming, I did, and I gave it a shot. And I don't know, I think I just did this. I kept myself in the same frame of mind daily for, like, well over a year of just, like, I just got to do what I got to do, like, right in front of me. You know, I'm, like, I'm only in control of what I can actually reach and touch and, like, what's right in front of me. And, because, you know, you come in and then you got loads of wreckage, you know, like, never mind the material stuff. That's like, honestly, even to today, I know that I always knew that that's not the stuff I was really trying to get back. It was the trust and the relationships.
Yeah,
and you know, trying to be a son, trying to be a brother, trying to be, you know, a family member. Yeah, yeah. So it's like, yeah, just trying to be a half decent human being when you have a, you know, a lifetime of fuck ups. Like that's that's a tough one. You're swimming against the stream, man. You know, you're coming up, and all your cards are stacked against you. And so it was like, it was really important for me in the beginning stages getting sober. Was like, what can I do today that's for, like, in a positive light for my addiction? Like, what's good I can do so that I don't continue to make these decisions? And, like, day in and day out, I would do those things. And and there were simple things, man. Sometimes they were simple as, like, making your bed, you know?
Yeah.
And
Dan said that last week.
Yeah.
Making your bed.
Yeah.
We talked about that.
Yeah. You know, something simple like that. Like, the prayer and meditation piece was good. Going to meetings was good.
Yeah.
Talking to other people with similar problems was good. Keeping a small circle when problems came up, when situations in life came up that brought up some sort of discomfort and I didn't know what to do, I tried to reach out to people that would have that personal experience.
Yeah.
This is all stuff that was taught to me. Like, I really feel like I didn't learn much in my life previous to getting sober. I acted a lot, but I never learned from the actions that I did.
Right.
And now, you know, I try to learn from not only my own, but other people's actions too, you know?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, like when we used to go over to that place over in Salty on Mondays.
Yeah, the meditation meeting.
I love that.
Yeah,
I love that.
That was
meeting.
Big. I'll be honest, that meeting probably single-handedly changed my perspective on everything concerning being sober.
Yep.
It just made me realize how much of this thing is really in my head. And
what was the meditation? What would you would just go there and meditate?
Yeah, well, it was like a group, a peer-led meditation meeting where, like, someone would speak. They would do like a 15-minute meditation, and then they would open the room up to, you know.
It was called Rebel Recovery.
Yeah,
you didn't have to be in any type of
12-step
fellowship. Yeah.
Huge plug to Rebel Recovery.
Yeah,
yeah. And it was nothing. Yeah, it was just a meeting that wasn't in the book. That was you're trying to explore this sobriety thing, this life thing. That's like I can't get to hold this thing for anything. Like, for the life of me, I've tried everything. And, you know, luckily somebody was like, hey, man, come check out this meditation meeting. And I was like, what do you do? And they're like, you sit still and don't say anything and, you know, shut your eyes.
I can't do that. I can't do that. And
that makes me think of Liv and Casillo and the first night is silent.
Oh, yeah.
And that's
wild. I remember that.
Yeah.
It's like a church retreat.
Yeah.
But it just... Everybody's silent, like,
right.
The whole place. There's a bunch of people, and nobody says anything. It's kind of weird, right?
Yeah, of course. Well, I mean, how often are you in that silence? In today's world is kind of like constant.
Because we're uncomfortable in silence.
Yeah.
Like, we always got to be talking or doing or listening,
right.
You know?
Yeah.
But to sit with self.
Right.
Like, dude, I remember the first time when I was sober that I went out to eat by myself.
Yeah.
Really?
Made that decision.
Yeah.
Not because someone stood me up, not because there was no one else to go out with. It was, I was okay with sitting down at a table by myself and ordering
a
meal
freedom?
And eating it.
Right.
I was like,
wow,
this is pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
Not worrying about what anyone was, oh, look at that poor prick by himself over there.
Yeah.
No.
Right.
No, I was completely okay.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's special. And I wish I had more of those moments now. it seems like
that's
that,
over now.
Yeah, it seems like that first year in recovery was it was really mind blowing. But I didn't know what was happening. You know, I just did daily things. But yeah, a lot of it was trying to just sit with that silence that I've been avoiding for a really long time.
Yep. Just because of that noise that we have in our head.
Yeah.
That, you know, everyone thinks that you have to stop that to meditate. No, you just have to not feed into it.
Yeah.
It goes on.
Yeah.
It happens.
Yeah.
Like, you talk to a monk, they'll tell you, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
But, like, we think that we have to shut everything off. No, we just don't entertain it.
Yeah.
Don't follow it. Don't go down the rabbit hole.
That's what I was taught. Mike Givoni taught me that, like, identification with that voice is what the problem is. That voice isn't necessarily you.
Right.
You are beyond that. You know?
Yeah.
You can get separation from that. You can watch it happening.
Right.
You can be the observer and just be in the moment. And I've done it.
Right.
And it's like bliss. It's like you sit there and just
You're not controlled by it.
It's like freedom.
Yeah.
It's like
real freedom.
Attachment. No attachment.
No attachment to that thoughts, those thoughts, the, that monkey brain that's jumping around all over the place. That's not me. I can just sit there and kind of chuckle to myself about it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely, yeah.
Like, I see you.
It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, yeah. You know? Yeah, the committee, the pity committee.
Yep.
Yeah. In your head. I mean, there's a lot, you know, I mean, it was the first time when I realized that, like, yeah, I'm not my thoughts. Like you said, like, I'm not, and just because these thoughts are taking place, like, doesn't make them real. You know, these things just take place. And I was controlled by that. So the meditation piece was like, yeah, I mean, if I thought something and then I obsessed about it, it ultimately was going to turn into an action. And then compulsively I was going to do something about
it. Like, you manifest everything in your head.
So a lot of it begins and ends there. Like it starts and it ends in between your ears.
I was taught that down in Florida in this program. I went down there. It was like self-talk leads to emotions. Leads to actions, and a lot of times it's the wrong actions.
Right.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Because you're saying all this stuff that's not necessarily real, certainly isn't happening in the moment.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Then you're getting all upset about it, and then you're gonna go out and do whatever because you know all this
that big story in my head.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, like a lot of the in the specific in the text of the big book, a lot of the without going too much detail, a lot of it is about what should be. It should be more about the think before the drink, the thought. So there's a few parts in there that I know that I'm like, it's talking about this thought that takes place before that drink happens.
Yeah.
And that's where the work needs to be done, is in that thought. You know, there obviously there's a point of no return with this stuff too. So there's a lot of it that talks about what happens after you pick up the drink.
But, yeah.
But we're trying to stop it before it happens, and it's with that thought. So what do you do with that thought? And for me, it was I can't sit with this thought. I got to run from this thought. What's the best way to run from this thought is to turn the volume up, and mask it with drugs and alcohol. You know, that always worked.
But all those times, you know, like I've done it countless times. Like I'm not doing this today. And then you know,
Like
absolutely. It says, beating on the bar. Like how'd I get here again?
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you don't get what you want. And so you get upset, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll show them, and you go out and use, you know.
Like a toddler throwing like a tantrum.
That's right. It's like a tantrum.
So childish.
A lot of that stuff is.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, it's just a real base emotional reaction, you know.
Yeah.
And.
Yeah, because I didn't get what I want.
Cause
You know.
Yeah.
It's not life life on life's terms. It's like life on my terms.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
If it's not on my terms, then I'm going to destroy myself over it? What?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'll show you. I'm going to end up in jail and detox.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Watch me shit in my pants and fucking.
Right. Yeah, a lot of stuff you're saying is opposites. Like, these opposite. These, like, through being, like, so. I don't know. In sobriety, it's like I was so irresponsible at one point that the word responsible wasn't even in my vocabulary, and now it's the opposite, right? I'm like, totally opposite. So even if you can't wrap your mind around how somebody's like getting high the way they do, it's like it's usually because of the opposite reason almost.
Yeah,
you know.
But like being around here and going to meetings and not doing the work, like.
That's inevitable if you have any history like mine.
I say it all the time. I was blessed for a long time, for over 7 years, without doing any work on myself.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, still did all the same old grimy shit. And now I got nothing to get rid of those feelings.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Mm. And, like, you know, you get sober because of what's going on in your alcoholism. And then you pick up because of what's going on in your sobriety. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Absolutely. Like if you don't change, if you don't do anything,
That's
right.
Like you laugh about it. Oh, you got to change the person you brought in here. You know. Yeah.
No,
yeah. Whatever, buddy.
Right.
You know.
Right,
go grab another black coffee.
Yeah.
But
it is all about change, man. That's the one key element, right? That's. I mean, what the hell are we even? But what was funny was I was so scared of change because I had no idea what it would look like. And if you're asking a kid that has a history of being a drug addict and an alcoholic and like a really destructive lifestyle. What change is going to look like? I don't think I want to know. You know, when I was so caught up, like if you were like,
that's true.
If you were trying to sell me this life that was nothing like the life I knew, which I became so comfortable with the pain and the misery that came with it.
Yeah.
And then you're offering me this other life this idea that, like, you know, that stuff doesn't exist or whatever. I'd say you're a bold-faced liar, you know, and I didn't want anything to do with it. But it was like, yeah, I don't know.
It's like we're so far gone, we can't even see it.
Well, yeah, definitely.
Like, what do you mean? No, yeah. I know how life's supposed to be,
right?
Because that's just what we've come to accept.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, definitely.
Well, when you know,
but then you end up at a place like PT, and
right,
you know, they show you what's up.
The place is a little destructive too.
Yeah.
Well, when you build your identity out of all this bullshit,
yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah,
you have to, you know, let that die. That's what I did. Well, I mean, I had to let that person die in my life. I used to be a guitar player and a bass player, and I was like all about that for years and years and years.
Yep.
Except when I, you know, once I started down the hard drug path, I got away from it quite a bit. And every time I get sober, I'd grab my guitar again. I'd start going into it. I'd start thinking about being in bands and this and that. And, you know, I had to let that identity go.
Yeah.
Because it was just bringing me back.
Yes.
Yeah.
Some sort of fucking fantasy in my head identity that I had built for myself.
The delusion of what
I wanted it to be like.
Right.
And always kept going down that same path.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That was the guy.
Yeah.
That was the guy I was creating in my head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was the guy who used dope and the guy who partied all the time and all that stuff. And I had to give. And then as I was sober for a long time and working on myself, this and that, eventually I learned to shake hands with part of my, a little bit, you know what I mean?
Super important.
I learned to look at the things that were good about me in the past, you know?
Yeah.
You know?
Like, just because that happened doesn't mean you can never play the guitar again.
Right. That's right. Know? Although I never have found time to go back there, but I would, you know, if I really had that urge to, it was more about some sort of lifestyle that I wanted to do, you know?
Yeah.
But it's just not there for me anymore. Like, I'm so happy now with who I am now.
Yeah.
You know? And I just, there's nothing there in a drink or a drug.
Right.
You know what I mean? I don't want to check out. I'm enjoying myself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's just getting to that point. You don't believe it's possible. And like I've said before, when I first got sober, I was willing to walk through fucking snow uphill both ways, you know, with no shoes on for the rest of my life if it meant being sober. I didn't give a shit because I just, all I knew was I couldn't take not being in control of myself, sticking needles in my arm every day, you know, getting sick every day, blah, 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 you know, never having enough hustle.
Oh, I was professional at being sick.
Yeah. Well, I was definitely, I looked at it like, I didn't think about my using like this, but let's say in a decade of using, right, from the day I picked up hard drugs and whatnot, whatever, to the day that I stopped, in 10 years, I probably was in institutions for 6 years of it.
Yeah,
right. I was probably waiting for the drug dealer 3 years of it. Yeah. I was probably dope sick more than I was actually high. Yeah. I mean, out of 10 years of using, if you accumulated the actual time I was high, it was probably like not even a year.
Right.
Right. Altogether, out of 10 years,
high the way you wanted to be.
Right. Right. Yeah. Like, you know, useless though. Like, so I mean, in ten, I invested a lot of energy into that, man.
Dude, that was the hardest job ever.
Right.
24/7. I had to quit my 40-hour week so I could stay high or stay not sick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You
not
know,
sick. That's
like,
right.
Honestly, like. Yeah. A regular job was in the way. Like, I need to hustle like when I need to hustle.
Yeah.
I can't have to be somewhere at 3.
Right.
What if I got to hustle at 2:30?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it was up and down, up and down. I didn't know whether I wanted to friggin' be sky high or lay it on the floor.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Just crazy.
Yeah. It's changed. So I'm like, for this change thing to take place, like, what's funny is it's inevitable. Right, I learned this recently, is that, like, you know, change is inevitable. Like, you're not going to stay the same. I don't care how hard you try to stay the same.
Oh, absolutely. You change every day. You're
right.
Not the same as you were yesterday. Yeah, yes. Not the same as you're going to be.
Just no concept of that, though. Once I had an identity with drug addiction and everything that came along with it, like, what are you talking about change? And what? how is that is not going to look good for someone like me, you know? Just unwilling to let go of that identity because I was so comfortable with it.
I built years,
you know, it took me years to build it and make it what it was. Like, I don't know anything else, you know?
Yeah.
I had had a, you know, I don't know, 100 different jobs, you know? You throw enough shit at the wall, some of it will stick. None of it stuck, you know? And I threw plenty of shit at the wall. So, like, I was, like, a jack of all trades, master of none.
Yep.
But I could always scrounge up $40. And it was pathetic, you know? It was sad, and it was pathetic, and it was a lifestyle that I bought into. But I was, like, I knew change. I knew from PT, too, that the change needed to take place, and it needed to take place, like deep within, like something needed to happen. And I didn't know how that was going to happen because I was like years of in and out and then hearing recovery and people getting recovered and watching people recover and unwilling to like ask them how they did it or even take the suggestions that they would give. And but really knowing that I need to change or I'm going to end up dead or a really long prison sentence, which was like a good idea at the end of my using. So it's like, what's going to happen? So it's like, I had to embrace this idea that I'm going to change. And I don't know what's going to be the outcome of it. But all I need to know is that it can't be this. You know, like, I don't know what to do. And to this day, I use that all the time. I don't know. I don't know what to do all the time. I'm not right all the time.
That's right. You don't need to know everything.
I don't need to, right?
That's right.
I do know for a fact what not to do. And I think I can build a good life off of knowing what not to do.
Yeah.
Honestly, and that's kind of how it's like, okay, well, I have some experience being a mess up and that, whatever it is, not showing up for work, you know, when it comes to lying or just negative behaviors and stuff, like, I know what not to do. I know what some of those behaviors can lead to. So I try not to do any of those things. And in that, I try to figure out what to do, you know? But still always trying to stay willing, like, asking for help and taking suggestions. And, like, I kind of go dumb, like back to basics a lot of the time. I try not to overcomplicate stuff. Keep it simple, man. That stuff is true to the core. It was the stuff that they talked about when I walked in the first time. And they were like, and I stood up and I said, Steven Marino. And they were like, yeah, we know who you are. We've been waiting for you. And, and you know, sit back down and take a seat and sit up front and get a, you know, get a sponsor and go to meetings and join a group and hit your knees and ask for help. Like, they said all that. That was the same stuff they said this last time I walked in.
Yeah, right. You know, because it still works.
That's the recipe.
It still works.
It hasn't changed in I don't know how many years. And I didn't know what, you know, so I just try to do those things on a daily basis even now. And my life's turned 180 degrees more so when I meet up with newcomers or friends that I knew when I was using and they knew me when I was using, I asked them to tell me stories about myself because I kind of forget.
Yeah.
You know, like, what was I like? What was I doing? Because I honestly do not know that person anymore.
Right.
You know,
so
like,
far removed.
So far removed. Like, I know he's there, right? I know that, like, my demons are still with me. I'm not trying to suppress them or anything. I know they're there, but I've taken so much action in a different area in my life. That when I made, like, I took some kid out, then I gave him ride home, and I was like, what were we doing when we were in the union together and stuff? And he's like, dude, you were a fucking mess. Like, you were ridiculous. And I was like, no, but, like, give me details. Like, tell me stories about what we did. Like, he's like, do you remember being here? And I'm like, no, tell me. What was that? What was I doing? He's like, dude, I wanted nothing to do with you. Even guys that were getting high was like, dude, I wanted nothing to do with you. Yeah. I couldn't wait to get you away from me. And, like, you know, it's so funny now.
Not a good
know?
Sign.
No, it's so funny now. But I was like, oh, my God, dude, I'm sorry. I'm almost making amends to them. Like, no, dude, we were both getting high together. And I'm like, no, dude, but I'm like, I don't know that person, you know. And I try to stay like that, you know. Like, I randomly bumped into – I live downtown, which is, like, where I used to, like, sleep.
Downtown Boston?
Downtown Boston, yeah. And I used to, like, sleep down. I used to get high in Copley and, like, downtown. We used to run around downtown Boston. And I see it all day long. I see it, and I see some people that I was in some places with, some institutions with. And the same – I was on the phone the other day. This is kind of an interesting – I'm on the phone with a friend of mine whose brother that I grew up with. Like, when I talk about that social life I grew up with, one of these kids that passed away was, like, a big part of that social life. And he's gone now because of this. And I'm on the phone with his brother, who's, like, a big brother to me. He's, like, more than family to me. And he's got an amazing life, and he is. He's like who I look up to as an individual. And I'm on the phone with him, and I bump into another old friend who's not like us at all, just working down there. And in the same moment, a kid that I was in an institution with. And right as I hang up the phone with this kid, the kid that I was in an institution with was like, you know this kid. And he's mentioned the kid that died. the kid's brother, who I just got off the phone. It's like, all this is happening.
Yeah.
And wow. All I want to do, honestly, is, like, get away from this kid. Like, I don't want to entertain what he's about to say, because immediately he was like, what are you doing? Let's go. And I'm like, dude, I haven't used it in almost 5 years. Like, where have you been?
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm not going anywhere with you. I'm like, I'll let you use my phone. I'm, you know, I can't really help you much. You know.
Yeah. 5 years happens in the blink of an eye.
Yeah.
When you're talking about somebody using.
Yeah.
I remember it was like, I was 24 when I started, and then I was 34 when I stopped, mm-hmm. when I got sober, and when I started using dope.
Yeah.
And I was 34 when I stopped, and I was like, I'm 30, what?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, bang. Right. You still think you're in your early 20s, and you're in your early 30s. I mean, in the pretend back of your head type of thing, the time goes by so fast.
Yeah.
It's like you're doing the same thing. It's Groundhog Day. Going to get high. I have to go to
but
detox.
But when you run into someone like that, it's like.
Yeah. Well, thank God, huh?
Oh, thank God, dude.
He was like excited and happy to see me. And like, I know the pain that he's in.
And he's exactly the same.
Oh, my. Oh, yeah. Same. I think he's wearing the same jacket as he was 5 years ago. And, you know, but he's a good kid. Like, you know, I identify with, but like, even to the point now where like I bump into him, I'm at such a point now where I'm like, listen, dude, like, you need to go over that side of the street, and I need to walk over here for, like, multiple reasons that I can't even get into right now. We just don't have the time. But that's, like, where I live. Like, constantly I walk outside the house, and, like, there's, like, guys in my alleyway that, like, are getting ready to get high. And like, I see it all day long, and I know that I'm just one bad decision from being like that. But I also know that I'm so far removed that I'm, like what the fuck is taking place here?
Yeah, you bump into someone like that, it's like, bro, you want some help? Meet me here.
Right.
Meet me here at this time.
Yeah.
You know, because, like, for years, I didn't even tell people where I lived.
Yeah.
Like, this was before I did any work on myself, but still, because just, I still have that junkie mentality. Like, I will see someone, and I'll be like, I know exactly what that dude's up to. You know what I mean? Like, it's Christmas time. He's outside the mall. He's waiting for this lady to go inside so we can open her door, take that bag of gifts out. You know what I mean? That was me. Like, it's crazy how that thinking never went away. I don't entertain it. I don't act on it.
Oh, yeah.
But I can still identify, you know? But, like a lot of times, you know, you said it yourself. Like, people were offering you the solution, and you weren't taking it. So it's like, when they're in that moment, you know?
Oh, yeah. There was nothing I was going to say to even.
Right.
Like, I mean, this kid was, I mean, I know him. Like, I've been in his shoes, whatever. And this is for anybody that might be in that predicament. For me, there was a point when, like, if you offered me, if I'm like, listen, I'm going to get high, let's go. And you're like, no, man, I'm sober. Like, let's go do the right thing. I'd be like, I need $40, dude. What are you talking about? You know, like, I'm not listening to you and your sobriety stuff. I'm not even, you know, and so like,
no, you're not going to talk.
So there's a point of like, I was in such a state of delusion just from my experience at times where he was at that moment that there was nothing I was going to say that was going to get him to be like, hey, let's go do the right thing. Or like, maybe you should hit a meeting or maybe it's like, I mean, no, and that's how scary this thing is. Like, you know, you're in a completely different world, but I'm in like a completely different world now too. You know what I mean? Like, it's like total, I'm on Mars over here in like real life on life's terms. Like, no idea. What I compare it to is early stages of recovery. It was snowing out, and it was, you know, 2 feet of snow, and somebody had a shovel in front of me and was like, hey, man, I just paved this way. Like, go this way. You don't have to go, you know, digging new stuff. I have the shovel now. I'm shoveling this snow, and I have no idea which direction I'm going.
Yeah.
You know,
but I mean,
the faith I built and, you know, in the experience I have now is I know that, like, if I just keep shoveling, somebody else is going to be behind me.
Yep.
You know, so I know I can share that experience. And I know I'm heading in the right direction because I'm not going and, you know, doing the things I was doing before.
Yeah. But, like, now, like, what are you doing for work?
I'm training.
I know what you do for work, okay, but you can talk about what you're doing for work.
Okay, I'm a trainer. So I'm a personal trainer. I train people personally.
Yeah, like this kid's really trained. This kid's shredded. He's ripped.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm in okay shape.
All right.
Yeah, but I can't.
Shreddy Kruger.
Yeah, that's it. Instagram plug. Shreddy Kruger. But no, I'm D shape. But that was big for me. The whole personal training thing was my first year. Again, I was in the gym as an outlet. Like
halfway house. But now look at it. Yeah, that outlet has has brought
and
you
it's helped hundreds of people. Yeah. I mean, I see it.
I follow it. Yeah, it's awesome.
I've had a lot of success with it, helping people. You know, not like financially or anything. It's like I made a job out of service work, man, which is what this thing's all about too,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
What can
cool.
I do? What can I do for other people, man? How can I use my experience to help other people? And you know, I never really was like athletic as a kid. Like it wasn't like I always played some sport, but I didn't go to college. I didn't play sports like that. It wasn't about that for me. It was like, I need something to do for this hour in between leaving. I'm getting kicked out of my halfway house and the first noontime meeting. Like, I don't even know what to do. So I got a membership and I started working out a lot. And, yep. And I was already working out from being in prison a lot. So like I had a little routine, prison routine. And
water bags.
Yeah, pull up, push up, dip. Yeah, that's all I was doing. Like I would go to the gym.
Yo,
like,
you get on my back?
Never
do
bench
squats?
Yeah, I never bench pressed. Well, but like I started to use that equipment and I started to really, you know, benefit from it. And it was just an outlet. It was a healthy outlet, man. I was just being active physically was like a big piece of this thing. So when it came time to like leave a halfway house, which was always a scary time for me, which direction am I going to go back home? Which I really was, it really was suggested that I shouldn't do it. Yeah. Like, do I go back to where I can't? Do I go back to the union? You know, do I go back to these things that that played a role in my addiction? I was like, no, this thing's about change, man. Like, there's that one thing you got to change, everything, you know, right?
And so you pretty much reinvented yourself.
I did. I mean, I don't even know myself, right? I eat granola and drink kombucha and grew my hair long. And shit. Like, you couldn't get me out of a white V-neck and Air Maxes a few years ago, right?
Right.
Tight fitted hat. Like, it's completely different. So, and I'm not afraid of what else is to come now, you know? Like, I feel like the best way to approach that fear is embrace it, right? I mean, it's going to be there. Like, that change, that fear of, like, what's going to happen if this happens, like, you're going to be okay, man. You know, like, I needed someone. And that's what a lot of AA was telling me. It was like, you're going to be okay. It's one big giant hug. You're going to be okay. It's not your fault.
Yeah. Like, your faith outweighs your fear now.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So, like, not even knowing. And way more fear today. Like,
yeah, because you're a new dad.
Whole new territory. Yeah, new dad, right? What is it? What?
Now you're responsible for
Boom.
A human.
Yeah. Mind blown.
A human.
Yeah. It's crazy, man. So
you get cool. to teach a little person.
Yeah. It's a trip. I know.
Very, very cool. And, yeah.
But it what's pretty awesome, too, is watching this little person.
Yeah.
Like my daughter, she's almost three. Yeah. And, dude, I can see the addict in her.
I bet.
So bad. Yeah. Like she manipulates. Really? She gets in trouble and she's like, hug. Yeah. And I don't want to say fucking no.
Right.
It's like, but I'm like, no, no hugs right now. No.
Yeah.
Good girls get hugs.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But
that's funny.
Like, it's like trying to 2 years it. Old, dude.
Yeah.
2 years old, and I can already see it.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that's a normal characteristic of a child, too, though, to try to manipulate. My daughter's 10 weeks, and I feel like she's already manipulating me into, like, sleeping habits and stuff.
Yeah. Whenever I would come across anything like that, I would give the hug. I would say, you know, I would just be totally honest. I'd be like, yeah, well, you know, it's my job to be the dad, you know, and you got to kind of work with me here. I mean, there's reasons behind what I'm trying to tell you,
right,
you know?
Right.
Yeah.
That was my thing.
Yeah. I mean, this is a whole different topic, right? And it's exciting and it's scary. And, and I'm like, what the fuck to do? I don't know what to do, right? But again, I know what not to do because growing up for me was like, why can't I steal? And they'd be like, because I said so. And I'd be like, but you steal. You know, you're like,
oh, yeah.
Like, how am I going to wrap my mind around? There was no, like, you know, it that's what it was. That was my normal. And I know that I'm going to have a conversation like, whoa, honey, you can't do this because you wouldn't like it if somebody did it to you. Like, that was never said to me, you know? Like, I never even knew somebody else existed that could hurt me potentially. Like, because I was constantly just hurting everybody else.
Yeah.
You know?
But, you know, in this, in recovery, like, you know, I can't really tell someone to do something if I'm not doing it.
Exactly, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's
like,
huge.
Yeah.
Even in your work.
Yeah.
Like, all right, I got this way. This is how I did it.
Right.
You know?
Right.
You can't sit there eating a donut and be like,
right.
Yeah, go ahead, 20 more, dude.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. You're right. You can't do it in front of them.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. No, right? It is. That's a big philosophy, you know, of you can't give it away if you don't have it, right?
Yep.
So it's more of a reason for you to keep it. Right, it's more of a reason for you to keep up with it, whatever it is. If you're trying to give it away, the best way to learn something is to teach it.
Yeah, right? That's for sure. Yeah.
That's the best way to learn something is to try to teach someone. So, you know, I'm really lucky that my field of work, my career path, has taken off, and it's in a field where I'm constantly helping people. So that when shit hits the fan in other areas, like I go home and I sleep good at night, knowing that I tried to help someone else out selflessly.
Yeah, and you know? And something like that, like I'm sure you end up helping people with more than just their physical condition.
Yeah. That's my
it's like going to the barber,
man.
Dude.
Yeah.
You go to the barber, you talk about fucking everything.
Yeah.
You
that's
know?
A little therapy session.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. And
exactly.
That's like that's my expertise. So it's like I work with as much as it's about fat loss and muscle gain and toning and you know, increasing your metabolism or whatever, you know, all this physical personal trainer talk, it's like how are you doing, man? Like how you feeling, you know? Like I've had people not lose weight and feel way better than they've ever felt before just from showing up to the gym a couple times a week.
Right.
Right. And I've had people lose tons of weight and then not feel so hot, right?
Yeah.
Because
what's going on in your
life?
Right. What's really going on?
Yeah, well there's something
what's
else.
Really
yeah,
going
what's
on?
Really going on. So like, you know, that's my kind of piece is like, you know, I bring nutrition into it a lot. I talk about how you're eating. I know that can affect my mood when I'm not in a good mood.
I go
to sleep. I go, how's my sleep habit, which is awful now. But again, it's
sleep when
sleeping.
She does.
Right. That's a major key. I haven't tackled that one yet.
Mm.
But again, it's like sleep, my nutrition. Like, am I taking enough water? Because I'm nuts, right? And those are things I can be in control of. So I try to tackle those, and I use those with my profession to be like, if you are getting an X amount of hours of sleep, if you're eating, you know, a few more veggies on your plate, some greens, like I keep it real simple, a little less of this and a little more of these, and then you start treating people really good, like you're probably going to feel better. And if you feel better, I guarantee you'll show up to the gym more.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
Like the physical piece ends up being like one of the last pieces.
Yeah, it's mental.
You know, so I end
that's
up.
Right. Say, everything's mental.
Yeah, because if you're at home and you're like, fuck, what the fuck,
right.
Gym?
Right.
You know, fuck that. I'm not going.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't feel good. I don't want to go.
So I had a bad day.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, who wants to? I mean, I've been working doing this for almost 5 years, and I've realized that not many people want to show up, even the ones that want to show up. Like, even the ones that do show up all the time, they don't want to show up all the time, you know?
Right.
It's something that's just like anything else. If you want to get better at doing something, do it often, do it consistently, and try to do better than you did last time. And you will become better at it. Anything you practice, you'll get good at.
Absolutely.
Including bullshit.
Right?
True.
Practice that a couple of times.
Yeah.
Maybe.
So I became really good at bullshit because I practice this a lot. Now I practice other things, and I become really good at them, whether I want to or not. So I just continue to do that, and other people benefit from it. So there's nothing, there's no greater feeling than like knowing that your actions are positively affecting somebody else's life, you know.
That is absolutely true, man.
I went over to one of the halfway houses I was in recently, and tried to get their everybody that's on that 30-day restriction.
Yeah,
trying to get them, just opening up the idea if you guys want to come to the gym and you know get active, really just move around a lot, man. Like we can do whatever we want to do, but the focus is really recovery related. But it's getting physical. It's the physical piece. So it's mental, physical, spiritual, right? They talk about threefold,
all
this stuff. So the physical piece for me was like making sure that I was active all the time. And so I'm often trying to offer that service now to halfway houses and maybe try to build something there.
Yeah.
Nice. Yep. Plug it up. Corner,
right? Yeah. Plug How does someone get a hold of you if they want to get fit?
Website, stevemarinotraining.com. It's also an Instagram, Steve Marino, Steve_Marino_training.
Nice.
What's this Shreddy Krueger? No,
Shreddy Krueger was a personal one. That's the first one. Right. Yeah. That was when my ego was really big in my second year of recovery.
Yeah.
And, and I was
the spiritual ego was huge.
Yeah. It was every other picture was of my abs. And
nice.
And now I don't do too much.
I mean,
of that.
I had him, I would have did it too, bro.
Yeah.
For real.
Yeah. But I put other people up now. It's not about me so much, you know?
Yeah. See them. I see the videos and I see like how you're encouraging people.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Again,
it's inspiring.
It's not about me, man.
I ain't there yet, but
no, hey man, you got your hands full, dude.
Yeah,
you know,
a little bit,
definitely.
Little bit.
Yeah, this thing's it's a big schedule thing too. If it causes too much stress in your life, you're only made up of. I look at myself like a pie chart, and I'm made up of 100% energy, right? And a quarter of that goes to work, and a quarter of that goes to relationship, and a quarter of that goes to recovery, right? And like at any point in time, life happens and drops a bomb on you, throws you a curveball. more energy is going to need it in one of those areas. And it, guess where it's going to come from? It's going to come from the sky, right? It's going to pull from other areas of your life, you know?
Yep.
Yeah.
So I try not to wear myself thin and keep the word balance, man. I'm going to get a tattoo. Nice. I don't have any tattoos, but if I get one, it's going to be balanced.
Come on, man. Didn't get the tattoo?
In Chinese.
Right on the forehead.
You didn't get the tattoo?
In Chinese, on my neck.
No, yeah. Neck. Yeah, neck tattoo.
On my neck tattoo.
Hey.
The word balance.
Hey, we were over. You sure you don't want a loyalty tattoo,
yeah,
bro?
That's what I'm saying.
Loyalty.
Hey, no regrets. No regrets.
We were over at the Rebel Recovery meeting, right? And we're sitting there talking, and he's like,
oh, shit,
dude.
Yeah.
He's like, dude, you got a big needle tattooed on your arm? Yeah. And I'm like, yeah. He's like, I know you. Yeah. You went to Project Turnabout, right? I'm like, yeah. He's like, man, yeah. I wanted to be you so bad. Yeah. You pulled up on your motorcycle sober and
like that tattoo.
Crazy.
I was drawing that tattoo in prison cells and shit, like, trying to sell it for soups. Like this big syringe with a face on it. And
yeah,
shit.
It was crazy.
Yeah,
it was crazy.
I had that picture in my head forever, man.
I know. It was
so
funny.
And that was what, 2006? I might have seen
you something
once.
Like that.
Yeah.
Well, it was probably the last meeting at the house.
Yeah. Transitions.
Yeah. Transitions.
Transitions.
Yeah.
Right? That was 2005 or 2006.
Right.
Something like that.
Yeah. You never know when life is gonna have like a profound, like you're gonna have this like you don't even like until later on when you look back on it you're like
right.
Wow that was a big deal to me. You
right.
Know, like,
yeah. Like you didn't know that moment was gonna be a moment.
No.
Right.
Why would
that's
I remember?
Right.
Why would I remember you pulling up on a motorcycle with your tattoo of a needle and shit and think that shit was cool?
I know.
Why? But I did enough to like bring it back up and be like, holy shit, man, that blew my mind. Totally blew my mind. And like I'm really happy that moment took place, you know?
Right, right.
Yeah.
So you just never know. I don't know. It's really important for me to try to continue to have good, you know, things going on so that I'm leaving good moments like that maybe in people, you know?
Yeah, like got to get rid of all those old memories, man, and kick up some new ones.
Yeah,
you know?
There you go.
Make some new ones.
Yeah.
Get rid of the bullshit so we can get some good stuff in here.
Right.
How'd we go? We went a long ways here.
Did
we?
Yeah.
We traveled, yeah.
How long is this thing you typically?
I don't know.
Right around this.
It's like a meme. It's an hour.
Yeah.
Yeah, an hour.
I can dig it.
But it forms itself. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
that's right.
I don't think we struggled through any time here.
No.
You know what I mean?
It goes by pretty quick.
Yeah, it does.
Goes by pretty quick.
Yeah, I can chop it up with the best of them.
Right?
Chop it up.
All right. I love it. That's it.
Signing out. We slap the desk.
Signing out.
Yeah.
Slap the desk.
Yeah.
The desk.
Yeah, right?
Shit.
House meeting.
some old PT terminology.
Yeah. Set up.
All right. Thanks a lot, Steve.
Thank you.
Yep. That's it. LOLterms.com.
The Life on Life's Terms podcast.
Yep. I live in this world full of anger and hate, and nobody is safe in this place. Oh, my God, me. Trying to stay sane, it ain't easy.